Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jan and I'm pleased to be joined by my fellow monk Dave this afternoon, who's agreed to be with us to talk about some pretty exciting improvements, upgrades that we have going on at the property. So welcome, Dave.
Thanks, Jan.
So what should we start with?
Well, I think we ought to start with our new truck.
I agree.
So it's actually really quite a thing that's happened. We've been in need of a truck for quite a while. We've got an old Toyota in the 70s, early 80s, I think it is. We actually had a little talk about vehicles a while back, and this one is an antique, and it's a great little truck. But we've been in need of something that, you know, is a real work truck and could do a lot of stuff for us around the property. Sherry put it out to the email class to help out. And wouldn't you know, people jumped in and everybody pitched in some money. And we got a little pile of money together and we found a truck. And it's a beautiful thing. It's quite remarkable for its size above everything else. We've never had a truck like this before. This is kind of the real thing. It's a Ford F-150, great big thing. And we're really excited about being able to use it.
In fact, we were just saying yesterday, we offered to the little truck it could probably get inside and ride around in the back of the new truck.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And what I love about it is that it really feels like a gift from the Sangha. We've been kind of joking around about putting a license plate or something on it that says "gift of the this particular email class" as a way to acknowledge just the incredible generosity of people who are able to provide something like that for us. You know, it feels like it's our truck, not in the sense of us here at the monastery, like it's our truck here, but it's our truck. It's the whole Sangha's truck. So anybody who's helped out with that, you know, when you come on the property, you see this great, big, beautiful green truck driving around, hauling lumber or going to the dump or whatever, you can say, that's my truck because I helped make that happen.
Yeah, I was really moved by that. In fact, I happened to be away when a lot of it was all happening. And suddenly, here was this new, beautiful truck, and I knew that the thing had been put out to the email class asking for it, but I was just so moved that, A, that idea came through. You know, as you said, the monastery has been needing a truck for a really long time, and here's this great way to ask for it through the, you know, people's gratitude at having done the email class, and then that people really came through at that level. And as you say, it's really fun that essentially this is the truck that belongs to the Time to Feel Good email class from November 2011. It's like a class gift kind of at the end of graduating.
And it really has just a meant-to-be kind of feel to it. We had a friend of ours was also looking for a truck and found this truck, test drove it, and found out it's just a really great truck. And then for various financial reasons, wasn't able to pull it off. And so we knew the truck was there. Suddenly the money was there to buy it, and the two things came together. And next thing you know, there we go. It just did its first lumber run a couple days ago, and yesterday did its first trip to the dump. It can hold about twice as much as that Toyota we've got.
Wow, that's amazing. And that speaks to what I was going to say and ask about next, was what an impact it will have on the monastery. You know, it's great to have a reliable vehicle and a, you know, beautiful vehicle and all those things. But really, when you come right down to it, what's so important about it is that it supports our efforts to support the entire Sangha, to have the monastery here, to have the infrastructure happen that needs to happen, to have people come on the property, to do retreats. The lumber that we're buying is being used to upgrade our facilities that will be available for people to be here for accommodation coming in the new spring. And so it's all very related. And so here we have this truck that's essentially a way to increase our capacity to offer practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the timing is really significant because there's a great big expansion going on here we're attempting to match the huge expansion that's happening in our practice right now. Sherry the other day was comparing it to a rocket ship about to take off, and so we're trying to keep up. And this truck is going to give us a big assist in being able to do that.
So actually, quite related to that, to our capacity to be able to have people on the property and join us physically to do practice, is another big upgrade that we're working on in our solar system.
That's right. In the mid-fall, We got a donation from a company called Systematic Solutions. It's a great company. They're involved in sustainable energy technologies. And the president of the company is someone who practices with us. And actually last year, with his help, this company, Systematic Solutions, gave us a very generous donation towards sustainable energy and towards our power system. And last year, we used it to buy a brand new inverter, which is a very expensive, complicated piece of equipment that basically turns DC power, which is the power that comes in off of our solar panels, into AC power, which is the kind that, that appliances use. And it's just a critical part in our energy system. The old one that we had was truly an antique. It was 20-some years old, and nobody could really believe it was still going. And so that made a huge difference for us last year. And then Systematic Solutions came through again this year, offered us another donation, and that kind of got us looking to say, well, what do we want to spend that money on? The most obvious thing was to get some batteries for our solar system, because the batteries are old, they're at the end of their life, it's time to get some new ones. But as we were having that conversation, and this whole expansion is happening in the Sangha, and as a result of that here at the monastery, we realized this is an opportunity to really upgrade our system to prepare us for being able to accommodate people here at the monastery in the way that we really want to. So we are going to get some new batteries because we need that. But in addition to that, we're scheming about adding solar panels to our system to increase our power capacity. We need a new, it's called a charge controller. It's the thing that sort of regulates the power that comes in from the panels. And we're even talking about getting some more trackers. Folks have probably seen the one here at the monastery that we have, who have been here. It's a device that it's a mount for the solar panels that tracks. It causes the panels to track the sun, and we're talking about putting a couple more of those right near the one that's there, kind of along the upper garden where there's a whole bunch of sun. I think it'll be very beautiful, and it'd be a real statement of what we're all about here.
Yeah. And there's some real practical benefits to all of that you're laying out. For example, having the new batteries is really going to allow us to store a lot more power, carry us through days when, you know, obviously when the sun doesn't come out, we're not generating any power. And so if we have a strong battery system, we can actually stay using our solar system and not have to go to a backup generator on cloudy days and in the evenings and that sort of thing. So that will have a big, big impact on us.
Yeah, it's true. Everything is, we're bumping everything up. So our battery storage capacity is actually going to double with the purchase that we're going to make. Our ability to bring in power is going to increase. And kind of the most fun thing, I think, about this whole thing is for the first time in our history, hold your breath on this one, we're going to be able to have electric refrigerators here at the monastery. And only someone who has dealt with the propane refrigerators we've had for so many years can understand what a huge deal that is.
Exactly. That's by far the biggest boon for, you know, anyone who's been the cook at the monastery in 100-degree weather knows all about taking produce out of one fridge and putting it in the other and making sure that the temperatures hold and that sort of thing. So it's really, it's great both for, you know, on a practical level, but also on a sustainability level and our footprint on the earth and all those things. And in addition to that, speaking of which, so we had gotten a donation for a refrigerator and realized at the time for an energy-efficient refrigerator, and we weren't able to follow through with it quite yet because we didn't have the power to support it. So now we're able to do that. We'd also gotten a donation for an energy-efficient washing machine, which can be real energy hogs. And so, again, we needed to wait until we had the solar upgrade, and so now we're poised to do that. So it's really exciting. We're also in the market for one more fridge, so anyone out there who wants to jump on board and participate in that, you'd be most welcome to pitch in for another fridge. You could just make a donation online for the Zen Center and put in the notes field for the next energy efficient fridge. And there was one more thing I was going to say about it that just flew out of my head.
I've got something while you're thinking about it. Just like with the truck, it's I feel like what's happening here is something that is belongs to everyone. And so, you know, everyone who has ever donated to the monastery kind of, you might say, sort of owns a piece of the monastery. And so when you come, you can think about it. This is a big shift that I think is going to happen. I really hope will happen is, as people come here at the monastery, they're coming home. I think a lot of people feel that way already. But instead of going to, the place where the monks live, as I'm going to my place. And I'm hoping folks can walk around, and when they see the solar panels, they can say, those are my solar panels. And when they see the new refrigerators, say, those are my refrigerators that I help buy. And, so we can all, it's all sort of a symbol of, I think, the Sangha that keeps providing this practice for all of us.
Thank you. That was it. That was perfect. It really is. It's an expression of, the monastery is here for all of us to practice. It's our place. And so to really feel that on a tangible level is pretty extraordinary. So anything else, Dave, that you want to add before we turn it over to Michael about the upgrades and that sort of thing?
Well, it's been implied, but just a great big thank you to everybody out there who is doing everything that they do, everything that you do to support this practice, because, we're here in the middle of it, and I think we have a bird's eye view on just how generous people are and how what a difference it makes, of course, in our lives, and I think in everyone's lives whose this practice touches, that folks are willing to give and also to participate in every way that they do. So great big thank you to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the truck is such a good example of that, just putting out to people, hey, throw in your $20 or whatever you can. If you can give more, great. And suddenly, before you know it, as a group, we've come up with enough money to buy a truck. So, yeah, it's truly a group effort. So thank you, Dave, for being on.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
So, Michael, we'll turn it over to you, but I have one thing about the schedule, if I may, before we do that.
Great.
I don't know if you were you going to answer the brand new item on the schedule about the video event on January 29th?
No, that's news to me.
Breaking news. So, it's very exciting, and I'm actually not going to give a ton of detail right now because I know we have to move on with the show. And we're going to feature it on the Good News Update next week, so stay tuned. But, again, talking about expansion and practice, it's a first-time ever live video workshop with Sherry on January 29th, so people all over the world will be able to stream it on their computers live and be a part of this workshop with us live.
Wow.
Pretty fun, huh?
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, so the reason I wanted to mention it tonight is I really, 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 we really want people to mark their calendars. We've done quite a bit of homework on the technology of it so that we can have the capacity to have the entire Sangha join us, truly. I mean, hundreds, thousands of people. So we're hoping that people will mark their calendars for January 29th.
Great.
Yep.
Very exciting.
Have a great show.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Bye. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you, Bea?
Oh, I'm fabulous. How are you?
Great. That was so fun. We get a sense that there's a lot happening at the monastery, and there's a lot happening in practice in general. So with that announcement that Jen made, there's another piece of it that they're going to say next week, I'm sure, but part of it involves us, and that you and me, and that is that we're going to then on the Tuesday following that Sunday, which the 29th of January is, we're going to do a two-hour radio show answer people's questions about what's going on, and then involving everybody, there's going to be a month-long email class that goes with this whole invitation for all of us to deepen our practice in 2012. So,
wow.
There's much, much fun and exciting stuff coming up.
That's
mm-hmm.
really great. I can't wait.
I know. Pretty darn fun.
Pretty fabulous. Pretty mm-hmm. fabulous. We have lots of great callers here, and
good.
I want to remind them to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Let's get started.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. It's Sridevi in San Francisco.
Well, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. As you can tell, we're all pretty excited.
No, as soon as Jen said that in the Good News updates, I immediately went to the website and was reading it on the page and went to my Google Calendar and already put a date there that said, hold for Sherry.
Oh, yeah. Very good, very good.
Yes. I was calling actually just to check in because I know that the last time I spoke with you, I was kind of coming out of one of those dark room phases.
Yes.
And
yes.
And you know, I've been noticing that I'm you know, it's been great kind of recognizing it. I still feel the depression there, and I guess I'm trying something new around it, which is just making those choices that I know are going to support me and getting up and working out and practicing and recording and listening and listening to the archives and all of those things. And so I think there's that part of me that doesn't feel like anything's changing. I'm kind of not going to that place of something has to change immediately as I do these things and just going this, just being here and doing those things that I know support me.
That is the exact necessary attitude of mind. You know, we're so conditioned to believe it's all about how we feel.
Yeah.
And we're conditioned to believe that because so completely not true. It really doesn't matter how we feel. Because as you say, you know what you need to do to take care of yourself. And you do that. So I don't know if you're a fan of this sort of thing, but Mercury has been retrograde for whatever period of time. When Mercury is retrograde, all kinds of things don't work. And the main thing is communication. So, but a lot of things, you know, planes are late and technology things especially break down and all of this. And I actually learned about this through somebody at the telephone company. I was complaining about something, and she said, oh, well, Mercury is retrograde. What? And since then, you know, it's just kind of fun to watch how, you know, whatever you believe about that, but from an astrological person's point of view, you know, it's the planets are doing whatever it is that they're doing, and so when that's the case, then things work in a certain way that they don't work or they fail to work in a certain way that they don't fail to work when the planets are arranged differently. So, you know, we can, if we just have that notion, you know, that everything is what it is and we are not in control of it, our part is to show up and do what we need to do. That's it. And sooner or later, things will, in fact, change.
Yeah. I mean, I know that the second I get to Philadelphia and that new baby is born for my younger sister, I'm going to be in a whole different world. I'm probably going to be completely and utterly in love and the happiest person for days and days and days on end. And I just, it's been an interesting way to kind of not for once, to not try to change, but to just commit to those things that support me. Even when the voice is coming in and saying, you know, you have such a blessed life, how dare you feel sad? I'm just not paying attention to that because I actually know that. I can appreciate and feel very blessed and also feel a little bit of a lack of energy. And that's actually coexist at the same time in those different parts of me. And they don't mean anything at all about my appreciation for life, which the voices, of course, want to convince me. But it's been helpful this time in a different way. It actually has taken some of the pressure off to try to change myself.
Yes, exactly. We have so many really unhelpful beliefs about that sort of thing. You know, that certain personality types get certain things. Or, you know, if you, you know, that you're doing something wrong if you get the flu. Really? How is that helpful? You know, the only thing that's helpful is you're doing the best that you can do all the time, and that's your commitment. And is it the best that you would ever do? What a silly conversation to have. You know, when you can do better, you'll do better. And it won't be better. It will just be what you're doing then.
Yeah.
So if we're right and the point of what we're doing is learning to have compassion no matter what, it really doesn't matter what life circumstances are.
Absolutely.
So here's the trick, though, right? So now you're dealing with this, feeling a little low energy and that sort of thing. And so you're practicing, as we like to say, as if your hair is on fire. Will you keep it up when you feel better? That's the trick, isn't it?
It is. Because I always notice that that meditation cushion is so much more appealing at certain times when I'm like, oh, I just need to escape certain things. And it's not meant to escape, but, you know, like, I could really use the quiet time. And then when I'm happy and everything like that, I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I don't need to do anything. Life is great. And it's a great reminder to kind of go, wait a second. That could be a good one of those, like, a flag will go off the minute I think that.
Yes, so here's what just occurred to me about that. When things are not going as I would wish, the meditation is a please. Please, I need some help and support here. Mentor, life, everybody. And when you feel great, the meditation is a thank you.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's our part, right?
Yeah.
And again, that's what we can do. Life gives us so much, and what we get to do is say thank you and show up, even when we feel good.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you so much, Sherry.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Yeah.
Take good care.
Real quick, I had to tell you something, a quick story. I was listening to the archives, and there was this great conversation you had with somebody about the little voice in the head, and you made a comment like, you know, does that voice even realize how hard relationships are? Have you ever said to that voice, do you know how hard it is to be in a relationship? And it made me laugh because I was just thinking that about weight loss. Like, this voice has all of this commentary about working out and eating healthy, and it never has tried to do that in its life. And I just went... I heard that, and I turned to the voice and said, you know what? You don't know how hard it is to wake up every morning and go to that gym and run on the treadmill and eat fruits and vegetables. So you can have no opinion on any type of judgment on my life of how I'm doing it.
That's exactly right. As soon as you have a body, we can talk.
Yeah.
Until
and
then,
that,
I'm the one in charge.
Yes, and I have to tell you, that was like one of those brilliant things that I just went, I love that, and I've been saying that to that voice and just saying, you don't get to say anything. So thank you very much for that, too.
You're very welcome.
All right. Good night, Sherry. Good night, Michael.
Thanks for joining us, Sridevi. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jill from Brooklyn.
Well, hello there.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. And yourself?
I am very good, very good. I am so excited to be on the show. I think this is the first time I've called in to talk to you. So I
think it is.
I'm so excited.
What's going on?
Well, I decided to start calling, which is a great thing, and I called last week but didn't get on. It's such a great experience to call in, too, I have to say. It's like a little retreat, like this whole, having the, desire to call and then, having to sit through all these uncomfortable feelings and, fear and, in the moment when, the next caller is coming on, that crushing anticipation, like, oh, my God, is this going to be me? I mean, it's just like all the sensations in the body. You're just like, holy moly, this is amazing. This is amazing.
It's like all of life in a few minutes.
Yes.
The thrill, the agony, the despair, the hope.
The disappointment, I didn't get on last week. It was so funny because, you know, I was just thinking, I'm not ready to talk. This is last week, and then I was ready, and then, like, I didn't get on. It was just that whole, you know, universe, you know, a lifetime lived in an hour. It was amazing, amazing. So I'm so glad to go to the next level to get on the phone. And, you know, I guess what I was thinking about was, my mind has been really powerful lately, really strong. I have in my life had very strong obsessive thoughts, and blessedly I haven't had, you know, it as bad in the last 10 years. And the past week has been really intense. Just it's been very hard to sometimes it gives me insomnia, and it's just been a lot of not sleeping, a lot of obsessive loop thinking, and a lot of judgment of myself for experiencing that.
Are you comfortable describing a little bit about what that looks like? Kind of what the content of process looks like?
Yeah, I think conditioning would really hate it, so I'd love to talk about it. I have obsessive crushes on guys. This is one of the contents. And so now I'm in this obsessive crush about this guy at work. And it's, you know, I have a huge process map of it, and I saw where I was in the process, and I actually found another part of the process. And
oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I thought we'd lost you. There was just a silence there after that. Okay, all right, here we go. And so that's what goes on. And so the thinking, the pattern just repeats and repeats and repeats and wakes you up at night where you're in that repeating pattern of thought?
In the repeating pattern of thought. It's mostly fantasy. It's, you know, does he like me? Doesn't he? What did this mean? What didn't this mean? What did, you know, what's happening, what, you know. And so what happens is that, I don't know, it's constructed in such a compelling way. I don't know what the difference is as to why it was so bad last week and it hasn't been that bad in years.
Frightening? Is it frightening when it starts?
Interesting question. I think when it starts, I guess I got a little frightened when I was on like day three of insomnia, and I was like, whoa, this is a little crazy. And you know, I have a sub. I call her Starstruck Girl because she gets very starstruck with these guys, and so. You know, it's so funny too because she's always the one who is just, you know, it's like a Disney movie for her. And, you know, but she totally disappears, you know, her only function really is to just be starstruck. So as soon as I move into another sort of, you know, experience, like she's totally gone. She's just very easily manipulated, I'm getting the sense. And I guess I was looking at that as being sort of the where I was stuck, and that she was just, for some reason, I don't know, I couldn't get the mentor in between them somehow.
Okay, so,
in a way that would help that.
Let me ask you this. When it first starts, is it perceived as kind of fun and exciting and...
Oh, yeah.
It's like falling in love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And then at some point it slips over into, it's kind of it reminds me of how people talk, how alcoholics particularly talk about drinking, that it starts off as being fun, and then it descends into this sense of, whoa, wait a minute, this is not that much fun anymore, and I'm losing control of it. And then it's on its way to a pit of despair and hopelessness and that sort of thing. Now, I get the sense that you're not quite there, but do you have a feeling that it's sort of on that trajectory?
Yeah. I mean, I think I had my first, like, loop, obsessive loop like this when I was 5. And that was one of the great things about going on retreat, is I was able to be like, oh, this is familiar. You know, I've been through this loop so many times. And, yeah, your analogy, absolutely. It starts out being like, oh, he's interesting. You know, maybe we'll be friends. And then it just becomes like this, it just builds in a way that, but, you know, unlike alcohol, there's no mind-altering input. But
of course, what you've described, it's a complete mind takeover.
Yeah.
And in really the same kind of way, mind takeover that has huge implications for the body, for the whole system. You can't sleep. And so you mentioned that you weren't being able to get sort of the mentor between conditioning or self-hate and this starstruck girl.
Yeah.
And is it... how are you practicing with it? When the thoughts arise, are you using them as a flag to bring you back to an experience that you choose instead? Are you using recording and listening at all to change your focus?
Yeah, mostly what I use is recording and listening. I have a whole folder specifically for this, and so it you know, I just play them. And I'll talk into them and, you know, play them back. And so oftentimes, at least last week, it became like a sort of a step-by-step thing, like, okay, I'm fine right now. And then it, you know, it became, but what is happening actually is that this is so funny because I didn't really realize or connect them, is that my ability to listen is being really affected by this because I feel like conditioning is really like, okay, you know, the help that you're receiving is through listening, and so we're just going to work on that because take that away from you. And that has absolutely happened. Like, my ability to concentrate on what I'm hearing it's diminished.
Yeah. Well, and of course, it's clear and clear that what you're describing is serious addiction, right? So with the 12-step notion of one day at a time, and I always think, really? One day at a time?
Yeah.
How about 1 minute at a time? I don't see how people do it, actually, one day at a time. And so it's that real fight to drag your attention away from where conditioning is focusing it, and back to where you want it to be, and that sense of just gargantuan effort that it takes. And I wish that there were kind of a quick and easy way of accomplishing that, but I certainly don't know of one.
Well, I'll tell you what happened today is I got obsessed with something else, and so that took care of it pretty quickly.
So the content changed, not the
content. Yeah, the content changed. Yeah, so, and it was actually about something else that happened at work. But, I sometimes think of it as a parking spot. Like, you know, there always has to be, you know, if in my obsessive mind, like there has to be, it wants something in that parking spot.
Let's be clear, though, that that's nothing more than egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, right? So, if we use code word the devil, then that's what wants to have possession of you all the time. And it doesn't, as you've noticed, it doesn't care what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
If it's a guy, great, that's easy. There are lots of them around.
Yeah.
So But then if that's not working, or just change of pace, or whatever it is, then fine. It'll slip anything into that slot as long as it has all of your energy. So
yeah.
As we know, the stakes are really, really high.
Mm.
Because I think, I'm not saying this to scare you. Hopefully it'll be an encouragement. But yeah, I've heard it said about people with addiction that you can only indulge an addiction for so long
mm-hmm.
and still have the ability to overcome it.
Mm.
That at a certain point, it simply wears away the ability to go up against it. It has just simply become stronger than... Now, that doesn't... I don't believe that in a kind of an absolute way, because anything is possible for the person who's motivated. But I think what's really behind that is that the person loses their ability to be motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah. If I've given in to temptation enough times, I just no longer have the strength necessary to make a different decision. And so just to, you know, kind of keep that in mind as you go up against this, just to realize that, as we said, the stakes are really, really high.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny because I don't have the outward appearance of having, it's not manifesting itself in any way that is, you know, impacting my life that someone would see, you know, so
yeah.
it's just me and this, you know, obsessive loop. I love that you're using such strong language to describe it, because I've had, you know, other addiction problems that have been, you know, I've gone to 12-step programs and I'm very active in them, and it's, you know, been a great part of my transformation. But for this particular one, it just feels like it's so thought based that
yes.
There's no, you know, that it just, when it comes, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, like.
Yes, well, you know, two things about that are interesting for me. One, you might start a 12-step program for this,
mm-hmm.
because I bet there are a lot of folks that would take advantage of it. And two, as you know, since you are familiar with 12-step, everything is okay until it isn't. You know,
yeah.
How many alcoholics really believe that they're pulling it off? You know, they
mm-hmm.
can still get up every day and go to work. They can do their job. But there's
right.
that decreased ability to recognize their diminished capacity.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's true. That is
yeah.
true. And that actually has been said to me before. Excellent.
Good.
I have
keep,
no idea
keep,
how
keep,
long
keep
I've been
keep me posted.
Talking. I will. I'm very excited to have called, and I am going to make it a every 5-week deal. So
good. Very
I'll
good.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
good.
Jerry.
Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah.
Good night.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software, for Macs and iPhones and iPads, and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Britt in California.
Well, good evening.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks.
Good.
Well, I'm actually good, despite the fact that I am sort of bedridden, not working right now, but I'm actually feeling okay about it. I haven't really...
That's a very good
thing. Yeah. I guess I'm kind of surprised by that, because I kind of keep waiting to see if it's... Or I guess conditioning is like, well, one of these days you're going to get down about it.
If it works on you long enough, huh?
Yeah.
And is it working on you?
Well, I've been hearing some a lot of conditioning, but it hasn't really gotten me down, at least not so far. I've kind of, you know, it says that this other reality would be better, and then I just say, well, that's just your better idea, and that's not real, and
right.
And then that's about it.
Yeah, because we can all agree that fantasy realities, we can all have fantasy realities that we're pretty sure would be much, much better than whatever it is that we're actually living in right now. So
mm-hmm.
What? Yeah. Because this is what we've got. I was having a conversation with somebody earlier about this. In fact, I want to write a blog about it, because the importance, this is one of those things I can't prove, but I sure hope everyone will prove for themselves, to themselves, that being, there are two things about illness that people, I think, don't really get, haven't experienced. And that is that being negative is the most harmful thing imaginable for our immune system, just period, across the board. And that's why, you know, when we're sick, the voices work so hard to make us feel bad about being sick. And if people would watch how, when they're sick, you know, there's a point when you're really, really sick, really hurting, that you're happy just to lie there. It's that place of, you know, you're afraid you're going to die, and then you're afraid you're not going to die. and then we know that place of feeling a little bit better, and the voices start coming in to express their unhappiness and frustration and that sort of thing. And what they're really doing is just, you get a little bit of life force, and it's siphoned off into feeding them. You get a little more life force, and it's siphoned off into feeding them. And so the body never has the energy that it needs to heal, because every time it gets a little bit of energy, it gets siphoned off to feed the voices. So that's just my best encouragement for you to
mm-hmm.
stay that that place of not letting the voices talk you into giving your healing energy to them.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, I think they were kind of trying to rush me to. Well, they were saying that it was taking care of myself, but it was really more like take care of yourself so that you can, you know, get back to work as soon as possible.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of just, you know, just you can take care of yourself for as long as you need to.
Yes. And the interesting irony or paradox or whatever the heck it is, if you really give yourself over completely to caring for yourself, you get better a lot faster. But what people do is stay in that space of, I'm going to be anxious, I'm going to feel bad, I'm going to be rushing this, and my energy is going to go to that. So, and the result of that is a person stays sick a lot longer. And we know that. You know, somebody has a cold or they have the flu or whatever it is, and they hop right up and they go right on. First of all, of course, so that you can share whatever you have with the maximum number of people, such a cultural priority that we have. So people jump up and they go around and then they get sick again. And then they stay down for a little while and they get back up again and they use up all of their healing energy and then they're sick again. And it's just such a great meal for the voices of self-hate. If we just do what the body is telling us is the right thing to do, which is rest, then it can do what it does. The immune system gets strong. The body has a chance to heal, and we're up and ready to go and strong enough to take on whatever it is that didn't get done while we were resting.
Mm-hmm. So what do you recommend for keeping up my meditation practice? Because I'm just lying down all day. I can't sit. I can't sit up in a chair. So it's sort of all the same all day, and I've been doing a lot of informal kind of meditation basically constantly, but I haven't been doing my regular like I usually do a fixed 20 minute and a 10 minute, and when I've just sort of been kind of on and off sleeping and meditating and like sending good energy to the parts of my body that are hurt and stuff like that. But I just have found it, I guess probably the voices or something, I just haven't gotten that kind of structure that I have when I'm working.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And don't you love it? Now they're concerned about whether or not your meditation is proper. They're just so concerned about you, aren't they? Just every little aspect of your life. So this is one of those places where I wish I could retain any kind of details about anything, but I can't. So, but I think it's in the Three Pillars of Zen by Philip Kaplow. There's a story of a young woman who had perhaps the greatest enlightenment experience in modern times. I say the young woman because she died at age 26 of tuberculosis. And her whole practice happened while she was bedridden. So I've always taken great encouragement from that our life circumstances do not have the ability to dictate our practice, the depth of it or the quality of it or anything else. Now, that's not to say that what we want to do is go in the other direction, which people are wont to do, which is, well, you know, if she awakened like that while lying in bed, I'll just lie down to meditate. It doesn't, you know, that's not what we're talking about. But there you are, and it's not really where you want to be, but there you are. And so you're going to practice the best you can practice in that situation. And so there's nothing to say that the quality of your meditation can't be just as profound as it would be if you were sitting in full lotus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I actually love being sick meditation, and which I think is why I'm never unhappy to be sick, because it's a very different quality to the meditation, and there is that kind of oftentimes that kind of going in and out of conscious awareness and just practicing being in that mind of meditation all the time through the various states. I think the most addictive part is that it can be quite blissful.
Yeah, I agree. I've actually enjoyed it, and kind of over the course of this so far, it's kind of transformed from the pain sensation being connected with fear to it being like almost I like it, because I'm sort of like, oh, that means I get to, you know, be kinder. And
yes.
I've sort of turned it around, and so when the pain increases, I'm sort of like, oh, good, now I can be kinder.
Yes, yes. And, of course, again, I know you're not going in this direction, but we don't want to get too addicted to that either. But as we were talking about with an earlier caller, you know, to stay with that level of loving kindness and care and compassion when you feel better, when you're up walking around, rather than, you know, there's this quality of life when you're not well, and then as soon mm-hmm. as you stand up and start moving around, it goes out the window and the shoulds come in and life becomes a stressful contest again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I really hope that I can retain some of how I'm learning to take care of myself during this experience, and you know, maybe this won't happen to me again if I can.
Yes.
Yes. Do that when I'm well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. And to see it exactly like that, that this is a wonderful practice for when you're well again.
Mm-hmm.
That you have this level of loving kindness to draw upon in other circumstances in life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you are most welcome. I say take good care of yourself and know that you are.
Okay, and you
all
too.
Right. All right, thanks. Good night.
Yep, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Britt. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from Texas.
Well, good evening.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How's it going?
Pretty good.
What's going on?
I'm glad I got on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you up to?
Well, I did actually call for a specific thing. But I also wanted, last time I was on, you asked me what I was on the Enneagram, and I didn't know, but it's just really obvious to me after doing it that I'm a 3.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, and it was kind of a relief to me, the opposite of, a lot of times it's a relief knowing I'm not the only one that has something, but this time it was a relief that, oh, I really do struggle with, like, a particular area of karma. It sticks me a little more than other people, like the polarization between success and failure, which I've chipped away at, you know, quite a bit through practice, but it's always still there.
Yes. I love every one of those kinds of things for that reason. Not that it becomes something that we use as an excuse, which I've heard a lot of people do. Well, I'm a so-and-so. And, you know, so it's like, well, give up on me. But just a, wow, there are nine types.
Yeah.
So that means, you know, one out of every nine people perhaps is a three. So therefore, I can know that I'm definitely not alone in these issues. And the other thing, of course, that's so fabulous is that place of, really? You don't worry about that?
You know, yeah.
That's not an
yeah.
issue for you? You're not
really?
you're not focused
competing
all
with me
the
right
time.
Now? You're kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of why I called in that lately I've been having awarenesses that they're going to sound kind of obvious if I tell you one of them, but they seem subtle to me.
Yeah. Everything is until it's obvious.
Like one of them is that I became aware of is that no matter how much I'm practicing just showing up and accepting whatever happens, underlying that is always, if I do that, then I'll get what I want. If I do, and particularly when practice is the content, if I do all my practice tools and all that, then it'll work out.
Yeah.
And what,
you know,
what I get stuck on is, well, why is that there?
Hmm.
You know, like that's,
yeah.
that's something that always comes in. Why is that? Why is that there?
Yeah, well, aside from so that we can stay stuck.
Yes.
Yeah, so the flip side of that, to me, one that I particularly like is, if I accept everything as it is, I'll never get what I want.
Wait, let me see. So if I accept everything as it is, then I won't get what I want?
Mm-hmm. So I have to resist people who are not the way I want them to be. I have to try to control circumstances. I have to try to make things be the way they should be. And that's how I'll get what I want.
Right.
But if I just accept everything as it is,
uh-huh.
then I'll never get what I want. Because getting what I want is a result of me making it happen. So it's kind of the flip of that. Either, you know, I'll hold my mouth right and hop on one foot, and then I'll get what I want. You know,
uh-huh.
I'll do everything just right, and then it's kind of child magical thinking sort of thing, or the adult,
right.
more adult version of it, which is I'll just put such a death grip on everything that I'm bound to get what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one is more accurate than the other, I think, but they both result in tremendous suffering.
Yes. I know that part.
Yeah.
But what
you're
saying
is... Because
it's
just not
true. Yeah, definitely not. But what...
Yeah, it's pretty...
I actually don't think I get what you're saying. So is what you're saying is so... Like going to the side of not wanting to get what I want? I mean,
well,
the opposite?
Well, it's more that...
Wanting to not get what I want.
It's more that... Doing or not doing something, we've put things together that don't go together. And
yeah.
we've created a belief system. So if I do this, then I'll get that.
Or, yeah.
Well,
X
no.
X means
if,
Y, and it doesn't.
That's right.
That, logically.
Yeah. So if I, exactly. Logically, we know it. Emotionally, not so much. So
yeah.
if I do this, then the result will be that. And so there's that deep emotional attachment to that, or there's that karmic belief about that, but it's just not true. So I'm over here busily doing what I need to do to get that, and it doesn't happen. And then, of course, I feel bad, and the voices want to beat me up and all of these other things. Now, the secret to that is, of course, if I want that, then I need to do that.
Mm. So it's the not wanting?
Well, the wanting is definitely the setup, isn't it?
Yeah, the desire. The.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, then the bottom line, kind of, I think, or at least a bottom line, is it requires a me to want something other than what life is giving.
Right, yeah.
That's what's really being supported in that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't even know what it looks like to just want what life's giving.
Yeah. Oh.
Or even to see what life's giving.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. That is such a profound point. We can't even see what life is giving because we're so focused on trying to manipulate our way into getting what we want. In whatever, you know, in whatever way we've learned to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, because like for me, I'm just trying to see what that looks like, and it's just me putting it back in there again. So I'm going to walk around trying to see what life's giving me, but then I'm back again.
Yeah, kind of doing the same thing. Now I'm in charge of seeing what life is giving me. Rather than,
exactly.
You know, the simplest way, of course, is just to be here having an experience of life or allowing life to live us or however we want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't give any piece of the pie to karmic conditioning.
Right.
Yeah. So that karmic conditioning, the thing that I think is so hard for us to get is that it is always pretending to have a certain, to want a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually doesn't. It's just that the wanting creates that separation that enables suffering to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So karmic conditioning would say, you know, you should have a lot of money. Because you just should. Because, you know, you work hard and you deserve it, or it's the right person thing to do, or it would be whatever the reason is.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a lot of money. So it doesn't say, oh, good, now we can all relax. It says, but you shouldn't care about having a lot of money. It shouldn't be important to you to have a lot of money. So it just slides off a few degrees into the next thing that it supposedly wants in order for you to be the right person. That's the implication.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always on us about something that's wrong about us that needs to be fixed so that we'll be the right person and then we'll have the life that we want and then we'll be loved and then we'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Does that sound like the way it works in your case?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, like for me, it's usually more along the lines of not enough.
Yeah.
But that's
the real,
exactly how it works.
Yeah. The real thing that's going on is just constant dissatisfaction. So that there's something wrong and you're going to attend to whatever that is, and that's what keeps it at the center of the universe.
Yeah, because another really quick awareness was I had a look at the last retreat I was at. The content was my trading, but the end of the process was it was very little time that I ever got to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a trade had to go immediately in my direction for me to feel good. And
yes.
I saw recently that you could put any it was just some sort
yes.
of awareness. I could put any content into that. And I just, you know, just rarely get to feel good. I mean, I feel good
yes.
a lot of the time, but I saw how that's everywhere.
Yeah. Yes. And the reason that you get to feel good a fair amount of the time, I would suggest, is because you're paying attention. Because the world is full of people who could be feeling good all the time. Right? I mean, just with content, you know, but the process of dissatisfaction is so strong that even as we were just talking about, when they're getting what they want, they can't, they're not allowed to enjoy it. They're not allowed really to have it.
Yeah, it, what keeps coming up is, so what do I do about that?
Right.
I just keep practicing, right?
That's right. We're doing what there is to do about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're paying attention to how it works. Because if what we've been talking about gets plugged into the same system, then it just becomes one other thing that you have to change in order to be the right person. We don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just checking, making sure there wasn't any other way.
Right. Yeah. No, the answer is always the same. We just pay attention.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
Good night.
And I'm very grateful that Michael shows up every Tuesday. I find that outstanding when I listen to the archives.
Isn't that good?
It's amazing.
Yeah, like a sunny day, he just keeps being there.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Linda from Alabama.
Well, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing great. What's going on?
Well, my parents are elderly.
Huh?
And my dad is extremely disabled, mind and body. And my mom is his caretaker, and she's in her 80s.
She's
in her 80s? Yeah, she's like 83. She's doing fine, except just, you know, the normal aging. Her memory's a little bit bad and stuff like that. But she's taking care of my dad by herself. My sister and I both live away from her. And so
she's tired.
She's tired.
She's tired on top of everything else, yeah.
And so, it's kind of like, and this is going on and on and on and on for, you know, we're talking like at least, you know, like years worsening, mm-hmm. but it's not like a short thing. It's
mm-hmm.
a long thing. And I'm kind of going along, kind of going, okay, I don't want to have a better idea, and this is just the way it is, and I'm learning from, you know, whatever. And it's like I can stay there for the longest, okay, kind of an okay place. And then my mother falls apart. And I'm just gone. I can't get back to there's nothing wrong.
Mm. Mhm. And so what happens with you when that happens?
I can't sleep. You know, I can't stop thinking about it. What really happens that I can't really is I start feeling like I need to do something. It's like I can go along and go, okay, but, you know, they're doing fine. This is just the way life is. People get old, you know. But there's always, for a long time now, I felt like we need to do something, meaning my sister or I, that my mom's past really making the right decisions. Like, her mind is not really, like, if she was in a more healthy mind, that she would do things differently sometimes. And so I'm going along, and I feel like, okay, I got to do something, you know. And then that's
so,
what gets.
So Linda, they don't want any interference, or your mother doesn't.
Very
so she's not.
I mean,
she's not saying you girls should come here and take care of us, or you've got to take care of your father, or anything.
I don't want to bother you. Please don't worry about us. We're fine. Until that one time when she just breaks down. I mean, this is like she was just sobbing on the phone. I'm all by myself. I thought he was going to die, and I'm here by myself. And
Yeah.
And now she's fine again. And let's get clear. Like, I talked to her tonight. She's fine. She's fine. I'm still I'm still over here and like, oh my God. Well,
you're a wreck.
Yeah, more or less, you know. Normally if I'm home, so I'm not. I'm trying to check and I get up. So,
yeah.
So, and you know, I don't know. That's just where I was when I called. It's like I just wanted to call because I keep thinking every week I'm going to call. And I have something different I want to talk about every week, but I want to call. And this is where I am.
This is what's up right now. And so do you have a pretty strong sense that that the voices are just taking advantage of this opportunity to make you miserable?
I do. And yet at the same time, I don't seem to be able to hear the mentor or hear the knowing inside about what I should do or not do. Or, you know, I mean, mostly I usually end up coming back to the conclusion that there's nothing I can do at this point and that, you know, I just have to let things be as they are. But
well, let me ask you this. What would the mentor say in terms of process if the content were different? Do you know what I mean by that?
I feel like I recognize the process, you know, like that might happen to me a lot where it's like I get to this point where I feel like I need to make a decision and I can't, or, you know, it's like I let self-hate get too much control over the whole conversation or...
Uh-huh. And so what would the mentor say? You know? I mean, do you talk to the mentor about that process in general rather than this content specifically?
That's a good question. It's like I feel like I have a mentor. I feel like I can feel her sometimes, like, you know, she'll say things like, I've always loved you, you know, everything's okay, but I can't really get when it comes
you need
to
a bigger wisdom.
Say it again?
Right? You need a bigger wisdom from her.
A bigger wisdom, yeah.
Right?
It's
kind of like if you were talking to the Buddha. You have a feeling the Buddha might say something a little pithier than "I'll always love you."
Right, like move up there and take care of your mother, or quit worrying about it, or I don't know, you know.
Well, or at least something along the lines of, you're not in control of life. You can trust yourself to know when it's time for you to be more involved, or you know, what could even talk to you about fears of not doing the right thing or letting somebody down or that sort of thing.
Right.
But a little larger perspective than I mean, it's wonderful to know that you will be loved no matter what.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, even with this particular content, that's a really important piece of information. It takes the pressure away from you have to make the right decision in order to be lovable.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So that's a very good thing.
Right.
And then there is looking at being tormented about situations in life. So you don't need to open yourself to being tormented. So when I'm doing guided imageries with people, I'll talk to them in this way. You know, so you're sitting there, you're breathing, your attention is on your breath, you're relaxing, and then I'm going to ask you a question. And I don't want you to go up into your head to think about it. I don't want you to turn to conditioned mind for an answer. I want you to just sit and breathe and relax and be present and then allow the wisdom to arise in your conscious awareness. Mm-hmm. And that kind of
process, I project, is what you're looking for.
Right.
Right. So that you can practice all the time that conditioned mind has you worrying and fretting and going back and forth is time that you can't just be quietly present and open to the wisdom that animates you, speaking to you.
Right.
Yeah.
So conditioned mind even says, oh, you can't hear your mentor. You don't know, you know. You know, it's even...
Wow, taunting you.
Right. Mm. Right. Or, let's see, it's like, you know, you sit there and I sit there and I think, okay, what would mentor say? You know, what, and nothing comes up sometimes. And immediately, of course, then self-hate, I think, comes in and says, see, you don't have a mentor. You're the only one in the whole sangha that doesn't have a mentor.
That's right. In the whole universe, actually, it's bigger than the sangha. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, so that feels kind of like what this might be pointing you toward, is addressing it not on the content, but on the process level, that you are not going to be tormented about this in such a way that you are unavailable to the wisdom that may at this very moment be trying to reach you. And so the practice becomes, maybe even a mantra along the lines of, I'm simply going to breathe and receive. I trust life to inform me.
Right.
And you just, each time the voice wants to talk to you about something, you just repeat that. You know, I trust life to inform me. I'm just going to breathe and receive, whatever thing like that that works for you, so that every time the voices try to pull you into agonizing over something, you remind yourself of what is true for you. And I suspect that in that opening around that, you're going to start getting some of that mentoring information that the voices have been cutting you off from.
Okay. I'm hearing that, so that's good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'll know.
And whichever content it is, the process can be that when I'll know.
Yes. Yes. And then of course, the work that we all face is not allowing the voices to start their second guessing. You know, when we have that clarity to just sit still with it and know that this is the best that I can do, and I'm not going to be tormented later for this. I refuse. I'm not open
there
to that. I'm not available.
Yeah. I will not have it. Okay.
Will not, exactly. I'll not have it because we know what it's doing. You know, if there were any chance at all that it had any kind of good intention, we would be open to it, but it certainly doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you. Take care and let keep us posted, huh?
Okay, I will. Thanks.
All right. Good night.
Great talk. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Linda. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I feel very lucky to be part of this practice. It's just amazing.
It is. It truly is. Yes, it's a wonderful practice, a wonderful sangha, and we're lucky. Let's never forget that.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Talk to you next week.
I will do.
All right. Good. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.